All right. So today we're going to dive deep into the early church.
Okay.
Right around 800 AD.
Yeah.
You know, the time of Charlemagne and all that.
Right.
We've got these excerpts from a dissertation that really unpack the Benedictine rule and how it was a really big deal back then.
Yeah. You know what I find interesting about that
is
that this wasn't just like some quiet time for the church.
You know,
we're talking major upheaval with the rise of Islam.
Right.
And Charlemagne being crowned the Holy Roman Emperor.
Mm-hmm.
This was an era just bursting with change.
Yeah, talk about a time of transition. Yeah. So what we're trying to figure out today is how this seemingly simple monastic rule not only survived, but actually flourished in such a crazy era. I mean, picture this. The Byzantine Empire is being rocked by the rise of Islam.
Right.
Charlemagne's coronation is redrawing the entire political map. Where does the Benedictine rule fit into all of this?
Well, that is the million-dollar question.
Yeah.
And to really get it,
okay, we
have to start by grasping just how important the year 800 AD was.
Okay.
Scholar Mark Knoll points to Charlemagne's Christmas Day crowning by Pope Leo III.
Right.
As a pivotal moment.
Okay.
Now, you might think, okay, a guy got a fancy crown.
Right.
What's the big deal?
Right.
But this event actually marks what we call Christendom.
Christendom?
Yeah.
That sounds pretty intense. Was it like a sudden takeover?
Not exactly. Okay. It was more of a merging.
Okay.
This fusion of church and state that went on to shape the political landscape, learning, art, and daily life in Europe.
Wow.
Of centuries to come.
So it was more of a gradual shift.
Yes.
With massive long-term consequences.
Definitely.
That's pretty wild.
Yeah.
But the source material also mentioned something called an eruption. What exactly was erupting back then?
That's where scholar Larry Wilkin comes in.
Okay.
He points to the unexpected rise of Islam.
Right.
In the 7th century.
Yeah.
As a major game changer.
Okay.
He uses the word eruption for a reason, you know.
Okay.
It was fast, powerful, and totally reshaped the world as people knew it.
Yeah.
Think about it.
Okay.
Damascus, Alexandria, Jerusalem, all of these major cities in the Byzantine Empire fell to Islamic forces.
Yeah.
The dominoes.
Whoa, that's a serious shakeup.
Oh, yeah.
I can only imagine the fear and uncertainty
absolutely
that must have created.
And you can say this external pressure cooker
really
sped up this fusion of church and state we were talking about. All of a sudden, there was this very real threat to the Christian world, and people began to see force as a necessary evil to protect and spread the faith.
Okay, so we have a world in constant flux.
Yes.
The lines between church and state are blurring.
Yeah.
And Islam is emerging as this major force.
Exactly.
And right in the middle of this chaotic scene,
we
have the Benedictine rule.
Yeah.
Kind of an unexpected hero, wouldn't you say?
I think that's a great way to put it. The Benedictine rule, which was penned by Benedict of Nursia back in the 6th century, might seem like an odd solution to all this turmoil.
Right.
But Charlemagne saw something in it.
Okay, I'm hooked.
Okay.
Why would he turn to this monastic rule
when
everything around him seemed to be falling apart?
Well, for starters,
the
rule was refreshingly simple.
Okay.
It wasn't overly complicated or demanding.
Right.
It was also what we call replicable.
Okay.
Meaning it could be easily put into practice in a variety of settings.
Okay.
And maybe most importantly, it offered a framework for strengthening both individual faith and society as a whole.
Wow. Talk about hitting two birds with one stone.
Right.
Yeah. So in a world that felt like it was spinning out of control, the Benedictine rule provided a sense of order and stability.
Exactly.
Like an acker in a stormy sun. Yeah.
And it's crucial to remember that this rule wasn't about withdrawing from the world completely.
Right.
It was about engaging with the world, but in a disciplined and meaningful way.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know, I'm also curious about how the Benedictine rule stacks up against those desert fathers.
Oh, good point.
That you mentioned earlier.
Yeah.
They seem to have a very different approach.
That's a sharp observation.
Yeah.
The desert fathers, they were all about extreme asceticism and solitary living.
Okay.
They sought spiritual purification through intense self-denial and isolation.
Right.
The Benedictine rule, on the other hand, emphasized community, balance, and a more integrated approach to faith and life.
Okay.
It was less about punishing yourself.
Right.
And more about finding a sustainable rhythm for spiritual growth.
I see. So could we say that the Benedictine rule was more practical?
Yeah.
And maybe more accessible for everyday people?
That's a very astute observation.
Yeah.
And it likely explains why it resonated so strongly in that particular moment in history.
Okay.
People were craving stability.
Right.
You know, something to hold on to amidst the chaos.
Yeah.
And the Benedictine rule offered them just that.
So amidst all the change and uncertainty,
yes,
the Benedictine rule was like a beacon of stability.
Wow. Uh-huh.
But was everyone on board with this?
Oh, absolutely. Scholars like Rodney Stark and Charles Freeman really highlight that point.
Okay.
They emphasize the rule's focus on order,
yeah,
holiness,
mm-hmm,
and devotion.
Okay.
All qualities that would have been incredibly appealing.
Right.
In a world that felt like it was falling apart.
It's amazing how a set of guidelines for monastic life,
yeah,
could have such a ripple effect,
right,
on the wider world.
Yeah.
It's like this quiet revolution happening,
yeah,
beneath the surface.
You know, there's this captivating image from John Henry Newman.
Okay.
That I think perfectly captures the essence,
mm-hmm,
of the Benedictine influence.
Okay.
He describes Benedictine monasteries,
yeah,
as a revolution of silent men.
Wow.
Quietly rebuilding and renewing society amidst the ruins.
Wow. A silent revolution.
Yeah.
That's a powerful image.
It is.
It wasn't about flashy displays of power.
Right.
But this quiet, persistent force for good.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It was all about working behind the scenes,
mm-hmm,
to bring about positive change.
Okay, so I think we're starting to see how the Benedictine rule,
yeah,
fits into this bigger puzzle,
right,
of the early church around 800 AD. Mm-hmm. It offered stability,
yeah,
a framework for spiritual growth,
mm-hmm,
and a way to engage with the world amidst tremendous change.
Exactly.
But let's zoom in a bit.
Okay.
What about the rule itself?
Right.
What were some of the key elements that made it so appealing and enduring?
Well, that's where we really get to the heart, yeah, of the Benedictine tradition.
Yeah.
And one of the most important things to understand,
mm-hmm,
is its focus on authentic faith.
Okay.
It wasn't about empty rituals,
right,
and just going through the motions.
Yeah.
It was about developing a deep personal relationship with Christ.
Okay.
It was about transformation from the inside out.
So it's about inner transformation.
Precisely.
Okay.
And that journey of spiritual growth,
mm-hmm,
was rooted in humility and obedience.
Okay.
The rule actually uses the image,
yeah,
of Jacob's ladder,
mm-hmm,
from the book of Genesis,
right,
to explain this concept.
Okay.
You know that ladder stretching up to heaven?
Yeah.
It's about climbing towards a deeper understanding of God.
Right.
And oneself,
mm-hmm,
a step at a time.
I love that image.
Yeah.
It's not about reaching some instant perfection.
Right.
But embarking on a journey.
Yeah.
A process of becoming.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's about the journey.
Yeah.
Now, another key element of the Benedictine rule,
okay,
was its emphasis on hospitality.
Hospitality.
Yeah.
How does that fit into the picture?
Picture this.
Oh.
You're a traveler,
mm-hmm,
maybe a pilgrim.
Okay.
And you arrive at a Benedictine monastery.
Right.
You're greeted with warmth and kindness.
Okay.
Your feet are washed.
Wow.
You're offered food and shelter.
Mm-hmm.
And you're treated with respect and dignity.
Okay.
No matter your social status.
Wow, that sounds incredibly welcoming.
It was.
It's almost like a radical act of kindness,
no,
in a world that was often harsh and unforgiving.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And it wasn't just some random act of kindness either.
Right.
This was a deeply ingrained part of their way of life.
Mm-hmm.
They saw hospitality as a way,
okay,
of embodying Christ's love,
right,
and extending it to everyone they encountered.
So you could say these monasteries were like little islands.
Yeah.
Of peace and compassion in a turbulent world.
That's a great way to put it.
Yeah.
And they weren't meant to be completely cut off from the world either.
Right.
The Benedictine rule actually refers to monasteries,
yeah,
as little churches within the church.
Okay.
They were communities that embodied core Christian values,
right,
while remaining connected to the wider body of believers.
Right. They weren't trying to create some exclusive club.
No.
But rather a community that reflected the values of the larger church.
Exactly.
Makes sense.
And that actually leads us to another interesting aspect,
okay,
of the Benedictine approach,
mm-hmm,
something we could call a centripetal force.
Centripetal force. Okay, I'm going to need you to break that down for me.
Okay, think of it this way.
Okay.
Imagine you're building a solid, stable home.
Right.
You start with the foundation.
Right.
You don't start by adding Viltiti decorations,
right,
or building extra rooms.
Right.
The Benedictine rule was similar.
Okay.
It emphasized an inward focus.
Okay.
It was about deepening faith within the community,
mm-hmm,
building that strong core,
okay,
before engaging with the world at large.
So it's like what inward focus creates stability.
Yes.
Before venturing outward.
Right.
Makes sense.
You could say,
yeah,
it encouraged stability and rootedness,
mm-hmm,
a deepening of faith within the monastic community.
Right.
And while monks did sometimes travel,
okay,
they were always urged to maintain a strong connection to their home monastery.
Right.
It's about fostering a strong core identity.
Right.
Before branching out.
So it's like a force pulling things inward,
yes,
toward a central point, uh-huh, as opposed to scattering outwards.
You've got it.
Okay.
And this actually contrasts,
okay,
with the Celtic monastic tradition,
right,
which was more outward focused,
okay,
emphasizing wandering and planting new communities in new places.
Interesting. So the Benedictines were more about deepening their roots,
yes,
in a specific location.
Yeah.
Cultivating that inner strength before spreading outwards.
Exactly.
Okay.
But while that inward focus provided stability and depth,
right,
it also raises an interesting question.
Okay.
Could it also lead to stagnation?
Ooh, good point.
Right.
Could too much inward focus limit growth or stifle new ideas?
It's definitely something to think about, right?
Yeah.
And it's a question we'll continue to explore,
okay,
as we dive deeper into the Benedictine rule and its impact on the world.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
Welcome back to our deep dive into the world of the Benedictine rule around the year 800 AD. You know, before we jumped into that centripetal force, we were picturing those monasteries as these awe-inspiring symbols of faith and power. I'm still trying to wrap my head around these massive structures,
yeah,
that represented so much more than just bricks and mortar.
It's easy to romanticize them, isn't it? But they were more than just impressive buildings.
Right.
They were tangible expressions of a whole worldview, a testament to the enduring power of faith.
Mm-hmm.
In a world that often felt like it was on the brink of chaos.
So like beacons of hope.
Yeah.
These towering structures reaching for the heavens. I can see why they would have had such an impact on people back then.
They were meant to inspire, that's for sure. But remember,
okay,
these monasteries weren't just isolated retreats.
Right.
They were deeply woven into the fabric of society.
Okay.
Think about it.
Mm-hmm.
They preserved ancient texts.
Right.
Offered education.
Mm-hmm.
Provided healthcare and refuge to travelers.
Wow.
They were cultural hubs, power centers,
yeah,
and even drivers of economic progress.
Okay, so we have these incredible buildings,
yes,
these centers of learning and influence.
Right.
But let's zoom in a little closer.
Okay.
What was it actually like to live by the Benedictine rule?
Okay.
What kind of daily practices and routines did it involve?
Well, at its heart,
okay,
the Benedictine rule is all about seeking God.
Okay.
But it does that through a very structured and balanced life,
mm-hmm,
of prayer, work, and community.
Okay.
It's about creating a daily rhythm.
Right.
That allows for spiritual growth and transformation.
So it's not about shutting yourself away from the world.
No.
And becoming a hermit, right?
Not at all.
Okay.
It's about engaging with the world.
Right.
In a disciplined and mindful way.
Okay.
As you delve deeper into the cruel,
mm-hmm,
you'll notice this emphasis on balance.
Right.
Moderation.
Okay.
And a holistic approach to life.
Okay.
Benedict himself believed,
yeah,
that idleness was the enemy of the soul.
Okay.
So work was seen as an essential part,
okay,
of the monastic life.
Mm-hmm.
Just as vital as prayer.
Work. I can imagine prayer.
Yeah.
But what kind of work are we talking about here?
It really depended on the specific monastery.
Okay.
Its location, its resources,
mm-hmm,
the needs of the surrounding community.
Right.
Some monks worked the live,
mm-hmm,
farming and raising livestock.
Okay.
Others copied manuscripts.
Okay.
Preserving ancient knowledge.
Right.
Still, others practice crafts like blacksmithing,
right,
carpentry,
yeah,
or even brewing.
Okay.
The Benedictine motto, ora et labora.
Yeah.
Pray and work.
Right.
Really captures the essence of their approach.
Pray and work. I love that.
Yeah.
It reminds me that faith isn't just about contemplation,
yeah,
or inward reflection.
Right.
It's about rolling up your sleeves.
Yeah.
And getting your hands dirty, making a tangible difference in the world.
Yes. It's about integrating those aspects of life.
Right.
Finding that sweet spot between the contemplative and the active.
Yeah.
The spiritual and the practical.
Okay.
And the Benedictine rule provides a framework.
Right.
For doing just that.
Okay. So we have prayer, we have work,
yeah,
and then there's the whole community aspect.
Right.
What was it like to live in a Benedictine community? Was it like a spiritual boot camp?
Well, imagine living in a close-knit community.
Okay.
Where everyone is dedicated,
mm-hmm,
to the same spiritual goals.
Right.
You share meals.
Okay.
You pray together.
Yeah.
You work side by side.
Right.
You support each other through thick and thin.
Mm-hmm.
And you hold each other accountable.
Yeah.
It was, and still is,
okay,
a life of shared purpose and mutual support.
It sounds both challenging and deeply rewarding.
Yeah.
Like a constant process of refining, yeah, yourself with the help of others.
Mm-hmm.
I imagine there was a lot of emphasis on humility.
You're right.
And obedience, right?
Those are foundational virtues,
okay,
within the Benedictine tradition.
Right.
Humility is seen as the key to spiritual growth.
Yeah.
And obedience is seen as a way of surrendering to God's will.
Mm-hmm.
It's about letting go of that ego.
Right.
And embracing a life of service.
Okay.
Both to God and to your community.
But what about individual freedom?
Hmm.
Was there any room for self-expression?
That's a great question.
Or individuality within such a structured environment.
And one that has sparked debate.
Okay.
Throughout the history of monasticism.
Right.
The Benedictine rule does value order and conformity.
Okay.
But it also acknowledges that people have individual needs and differences.
Right.
For example, the rule allows for flexibility in terms of diet and sleep, recognizing that not everyone has the same physical constitution.
So it's not a one-size-fits-all approach, even within this highly structured framework.
Right. That's surprising.
And while the rule provides a clear structure, there's room for adaptation and interpretation based on the specific context of each community. It's not meant to be a rigid, unbending set of rules.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Trying to create a rule book that covers every possible scenario or individual need would be impossible.
And that's where the role of the abbot becomes so important.
Okay.
The abbot is the spiritual leader of the community.
Okay. The guide and mentor.
Right.
Responsible for supporting the monks in their journey of faith.
Okay.
The rule emphasizes that the abbot should be chosen for his wisdom, compassion, and ability to discern God's will.
Okay.
Think of it as a shepherd guiding his flock.
So the abbot is like a spiritual coach.
Precisely.
Helping the monks navigate the challenges and opportunities of monastic life.
And don't forget, the abbot isn't above the rule.
Right.
He's part of the community and accountable to both the monks and to God.
Okay.
It's a position of leadership, but also of service.
Okay, so we've got this structured life, this rhythm of prayer, work, community, and obedience.
Right.
But how did this monastic lifestyle affect the world outside the monastery walls?
Right.
Did it have any real influence?
Now that's where things get even more interesting.
Okay.
Because while the Benedictine rule is designed for a specific type of community, its principles had a ripple effect that went far beyond the monastery gates.
Okay, color me intrigued.
Okay.
What kind of ripple effect are we talking about here?
Well, for one thing,
okay,
Benedictine monasteries became centers of learning and cultural preservation.
Yeah.
They housed libraries.
Yeah.
They copied and preserved ancient texts. They explored new agricultural techniques.
Wow.
They even fostered artistic expression.
Okay.
In many ways, they were the intellectual and cultural hubs of the early Middle Ages.
So like the universities and libraries of their time.
That's a great comparison.
Yeah.
And their influence wasn't limited to just the intellectual sphere.
Okay.
Benedictine monasteries also played a huge role in shaping social and economic structures.
Wow.
They were often the ones establishing hospitals, caring for the poor, offering shelter and aid to travelers.
Yeah.
You could say they were the social safety net of their era.
Wow. It's amazing to think that a set of guidelines meant for a small, secluded community could have such a wide-reaching impact on the world.
It is remarkable.
It's like a seed that was planted and then grew into this massive tree with branches reaching into every corner of society.
It really is.
Yeah.
And it just goes to show the power of ideas and how even something that seems small or insignificant can create ripples.
Yeah.
That changed the course of history.
Okay, so we've explored the Benedictine rule, its core principles, and its impact on the world around 800 AD. But what about its relevance today?
Right.
Does it have anything to offer us?
I think the answer is a resounding yes.
Okay.
While the world has obviously changed dramatically since the time of Benedict, the fundamental principles of his rule remain surprisingly relevant.
Okay.
And you might be surprised by just how much they resonate with the challenges we face today.
Okay, I have to admit, it's hard to imagine how a monastic rule from the 6th century could possibly speak to our lives today.
Yeah.
We're talking iPhones, global pandemics, AI. How could something so old still be relevant in such a different world?
Think about the challenges we face in the modern world.
Right.
Stress, burnout, anxiety, isolation, lack of purpose.
Right.
Believe it or not, these are all issues that the Benedictine rule was designed to address.
Okay.
Just in a different context.
Mm. And now that you mention it, you're right.
Yeah.
The Benedictine way of life offered a framework for navigating the chaos and uncertainty of our time.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe those same principles
can
help us navigate the complexities of modern life.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Take the Benedictine focus on balance, moderation, community, and purpose.
Yeah.
These are powerful antidotes to the frantic pace of modern life and the sense of isolation that many people feel today.
So you're saying we could learn a thing or two
from
these monks who lived over 1,500 years ago.
Yeah.
I'm willing to hear more.
Okay.
What are some specific ways we could apply Benedictine principles to our lives today?
Well, remember the idea of orat labora, pray and work?
Right.
This principle encourages finding a balance between contemplation and action between our inner and outer lives.
Right.
It's about finding meaning and purpose in both our work and our spiritual practices.
So it's about viewing our work as a form of spiritual expression and letting our spiritual practices fuel and inspire our work.
Right.
Not just compartmentalizing those parts of ourselves.
Exactly. Yeah. It's about recognizing that those two aspects of life aren't separate or opposed.
Right.
They can actually complement and enrich each other. Yeah. Becoming two sides of the same coin.
I like that.
Yeah.
It's a reminder that we can bring a sense of purpose and intention to everything we do.
Right.
Whether it's our job, our creative pursuits, or our relationship.
Now, another key principle is the Benedictine emphasis on community.
Right.
In a world where individualism and isolation are becoming increasingly prevalent.
Yeah.
This model of shared purpose and mutual support is a powerful antidote.
Uh-huh.
It's a reminder that we're not meant to go through life alone.
Yeah.
We thrive when we belong
to
something bigger than ourselves.
That makes a lot of sense, especially in our hyper-individualistic culture.
Right.
It's so easy to get caught up in the me, me, me mentality, but deep down, we all crave connection and belonging.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And remember, it's not just about having people to hang out with.
Right.
It's about accountability.
Okay.
Supporting each other's growth.
Yeah.
And challenging each other to become the best versions of ourselves.
Okay, so we have pray and work and community.
Yes.
What else can we glean from this ancient wisdom?
Well, there's the Benedictine emphasis on hospitality, which we touched on earlier.
Right.
In a world that's often characterized by hostility and division, this practice of radical welcome offers a profound challenge, but also an incredible opportunity.
Okay, so what does this radical welcome look like in our everyday lives?
It means opening our hearts and homes to those who are different from us.
Right.
It means extending kindness and compassion to strangers,
to
those who are marginalized or excluded.
Right.
It means creating spaces where everyone feels safe, respected and valued.
Okay.
Regardless of their background or beliefs.
That's a beautiful vision.
Yeah.
But I have to admit, it also sounds incredibly challenging.
Right.
Especially in our current social and political climate.
Yeah.
Which feels so divided.
You're right. It's not easy.
Yeah.
But it's also incredibly rewarding.
Okay.
It's about tearing down those walls.
Right.
We build between us, building bridges instead of barriers.
Right.
And ultimately creating a more just and compassionate world.
So you're saying the Benedictine rule isn't just an artifact of the past.
Right.
A relic of a bygone era.
Mm-hmm.
It's a living tradition that can offer valuable insights for our lives today.
It's a wellspring of wisdom.
Okay.
That can help us navigate the complexities of the modern world.
Yeah.
To find meaning and purpose, to connect with others in a deeper way, and to create a more just and compassionate world.
Wow, that's really inspiring. But before we get carried away with all the amazing possibilities, I think it's important to be honest about the potential downsides.
Yeah.
Are there any aspects of the Benedictine rule?
That's a fantastic point.
That we should be cautious about?
Yeah.
Any red flags to watch out for?
It's essential to approach any tradition or belief system with a critical eye to ask those tough questions.
Yeah.
And you're right. The Benedictine rule, despite all its merits, does have potential pitfalls that we should be aware of.
Okay, I'm all ears. What are some things we need to be cautious about?
Well, one potential danger is rigidity.
Okay.
The Benedictine rule emphasizes order and structure.
Right.
Which can be incredibly helpful
right.
in creating stability and fostering spiritual growth, mm-hmm. as we've discussed.
Right.
But if those structures become too rigid,
yeah.
too unbending,
okay.
they can stifle creativity,
mm-hmm. yeah.
individuality,
right.
and the ability to adapt to new situations.
So it's about finding that balance
exactly.
between mm-hmm. structure and flexibility.
Yes.
Finding a framework that supports growth
mm-hmm.
without becoming a cage.
The beauty of the Benedictine rule
right.
is that it encourages adaptation and interpretation
okay.
based on the unique needs of each community.
Right.
But it's easy to lose sight of that
right.
and become too attached
yeah.
to the letter of the law, so to speak,
mm-hmm.
missing the spirit behind it.
I see what you mean.
Yeah.
Blind obedience to rules right. without understanding the heart behind them
exactly.
can lead to all sorts of problems.
Yeah.
It's about discerning the why behind the what.
Now, another potential pitfall
okay.
is the danger of exclusivity.
Okay.
The Benedictine rule was initially crafted
right.
for a very specific type of community.
Yeah.
And it can be tempting to fall into the trap of thinking
right.
that its principles only apply
right.
to those living a monastic lifestyle.
Right. So it's about resisting the urge
exactly.
to create a US versus them mentality.
Precisely.
Yeah.
The Benedictine focus on hospitality and service
mm-hmm.
shouldn't stop at the monastery walls.
Right.
It should inspire us to reach out
yeah.
to those who are different from us.
Right.
To break down those barriers that divide us.
Yeah.
And to build bridges of understanding and compassion.
It's so easy to retreat into
yes.
our own little bubbles.
Yeah.
But you're right. True spiritual growth requires
right.
that we step outside of our comfort zones
yes.
and engage with the wider world
mm-hmm.
in all its messy complexities.
And finally, there's the danger of getting too caught up
okay.
in the outward forms of religious practice
right.
while neglecting inner transformation.
Right.
Now, the Benedictine rule
yeah.
does emphasize rituals and disciplines.
Yeah.
But those are meant to be tools
okay.
for cultivating a deeper relationship with God,
mm-hmm.
not ends in themselves.
So it's not just about going through the motions or checking boxes.
Exactly.
Okay.
It's about approaching those practices
yeah.
with mindfulness and intention,
right.
allowing them to shape our hearts and minds,
okay.
not just our outward behavior.
Right.
It's about the inner transformation,
yeah.
not just the outward appearance.
So it's all about finding that harmony
yeah.
between the outer and the inner,
right.
the form and the substance.
Uh-huh.
It's about walking the walk,
yeah.
not just talking the talk.
You got it.
Right.
And that's a challenge we all face,
right.
whether we're living in a monastery
yeah.
or in the middle of the modern world.
Right.
A lifelong journey, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's a process of continual growth and refinement.
You know, it's funny. We started this deep dive by asking how the Benedictine rule managed to not just survive,
yeah.
but flourish in a world
right.
of constant change and upheaval.
Right.
And I think we've uncovered some key insights.
Yeah.
It's about adaptability.
Okay.
Resilience.
Mm-hmm.
And a commitment to those core values
mm-hmm.
that transcend time and circumstance.
And perhaps most importantly,
yeah.
we've been reminded that this journey of faith mm-hmm. isn't a solo mission.
Right.
It's something we do together
right.
as a community,
yeah.
supporting and challenging each other along the way.
That's a beautiful way to put it. And who knows, yeah. maybe there's a little bit of Benedictine wisdom
right.
that each of us can apply to our lives
right.
to help us create our own
yeah.
reservoirs of resilience
yeah.
amidst the chaos and uncertainty of the modern world.
I love that idea.
Yeah.
It's a reminder that even in the midst of all the challenges and craziness,
yeah.
there's always hope,
mm-hmm.
always the potential for growth and renewal.
Yeah.
And sometimes the best place to start
mm-hmm.
is by looking to the wisdom of the past,
mm-hmm.
those enduring principles that have stood the test of time.
Right.
So with that in mind, let's take a quick break
okay.
and then dive into the final part of our exploration.
Sounds good.
Welcome back to the final part of our deep dive into the Benedictine rule. It's amazing how a set of guidelines for monastic life written over 1,500 years ago
yeah.
can still spark such a lively conversation.
It really speaks to the enduring power
right.
of those core values we've been talking about, doesn't it? Ideas like balance, discipline, community.
Right.
They resonate across time and cultures.
Totally. And one thing that struck me
yeah.
is how adaptable the Benedictine rule seems to be.
Right.
We've seen how it flourished in yeah. the turbulent world of 800 AD
uh-huh.
and how its principles still hold relevance for us today.
Right.
But what about all those years in between?
Yeah, that's a good question.
How did this rule survive and evolve
yeah.
through centuries of change and upheaval?
The story of the Benedictine tradition
right.
is anything but static.
Okay.
There were definitely periods of decline.
Right.
Times when monastic communities faced corruption,
yeah,
complacency,
okay,
or intense external pressures.
Mm-hmm.
But what's truly remarkable,
yeah,
is the rule's ability to be renewed and reinterpreted.
Right.
Almost like it had this built-in mechanism,
okay,
for adapting to the unique challenges of each era.
So it's not like some ancient relic gathering dust in a museum.
No.
It's more like a living, breathing tradition.
That's a great way to put it.
That's constantly evolving.
Think of it like a tree.
Okay.
With deep roots.
Yeah.
Representing those core values.
Okay.
A solid trunk symbolizing the rule itself.
Mm-hmm.
And then branches reaching out in all directions,
right,
representing the countless ways,
right,
those values have been expressed and lived out,
okay,
throughout history.
I love that analogy.
Yeah.
So let's talk about some of those branches.
Okay.
What are some of the key ways the Benedictine rule has been adopted,
right,
and reinterpreted over the centuries?
Well, one fascinating example,
okay,
is the rise of the Cluniac reforms.
Okay.
Back in the 10th century.
Right.
At that time, there was a growing concern.
Okay, okay.
That monasticism had become a little too comfortable,
yeah,
with worldly power and influence.
Okay.
Abbots were sometimes appointed,
mm-hmm,
based on political connections,
right,
rather than their spiritual merits.
Okay.
And some monasteries were accumulating wealth,
mm-hmm,
that seemed to contradict, mm-hmm, the Benedictine emphasis on simplicity and humility.
So it sounds like a course correction,
exactly,
was needed to bring things back into alignment,
yes,
with the original spirit of the rule.
And the Cluniac movement,
yeah,
really shook things up.
Okay.
They called for a return to a stricter observance,
okay,
of a Benedictine rule,
mm-hmm,
advocating for greater independence from political control,
right,
and a renewed focus on prayer, poverty, and obedience.
Was this a complete break from the original Benedictine tradition?
It was definitely more of a revival,
okay,
a purification, if you will.
Okay.
They weren't trying to rewrite the rule,
right,
or invent something new,
yeah,
but rather to recapture its original essence and intention.
Okay.
It was about going back to the source,
right,
stripping away the layers,
mm-hmm,
that had accumulated over time,
yeah,
and rediscovering that original spark.
I can see how that would have been appealing at the time.
Yeah.
Especially if people felt that the Benedictine path had strayed too far from its roots.
And the impact of the Cluniac reforms was huge.
Okay.
They sparked a wave of monastic renewal across Europe.
Wow.
Leading to the founding of hundreds of new monasteries.
Okay.
And a revitalized emphasis,
okay,
on the spiritual life.
Right.
It was a powerful reminder,
yeah,
that even ancient traditions,
right,
can be revitalized and made relevant for new generations.
Okay, so the Cluniac reforms show us,
yeah,
how the Benedictine rule could adapt to changing times.
Right.
What are some other turning points in its evolution? What other branches?
Well, another major shift happened,
okay,
in the 12th century.
Okay.
With the rise of the Cistercian order.
Okay.
They felt that the Cluniac reforms,
mm-hmm,
while well-intentioned,
okay,
had maybe swung a bit too far,
okay,
in the direction of elaborate rituals,
okay,
and outward grandeur.
Mm-hmm.
They wanted to bring things back,
okay,
to the simplicity and austerity,
right,
of the early Benedictine tradition,
okay,
to strip away the excess and focus on the essentials.
So it's almost like a pendulum swinging back and forth.
That's a great way to visualize it.
Between these different expressions,
yeah,
of the Benedictine spirit.
The Cistercians were all about,
okay,
a more minimalist approach.
Okay.
They embraced manual labor, simple architecture,
mm-hmm,
and a stricter interpretation of poverty.
Okay.
They believed that true spiritual growth came through,
yeah,
hard work, self-denial,
okay,
and a deep connection to the land.
Right.
And they also made significant contributions to agriculture and technology.
Wow.
Literally changing the landscape of Europe,
yeah,
in the process.
It's incredible how a monastic order,
it is,
could have such a profound impact on the world.
Right.
Beyond the monastery walls,
uh-huh,
it really challenges our assumptions about what it means to be in the world, but not of it, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
The Cistercian story is a prime example,
okay,
of how the Benedictine rule,
right,
even in its most austere form,
mm-hmm,
could still be a catalyst for innovation and progress.
Okay, so we have Cluniac reforms,
yeah,
Cistercian austerity. What other branches emerged from the Benedictine tree?
Well, let's fast forward a few centuries.
Okay.
To the Reformation in the 16th century.
Right.
This was a period of massive upheaval and change,
yeah,
in the Christian world,
right,
with Protestant reformers challenging many traditional Catholic doctrines and practices.
Okay.
Many monastic orders were dissolved or suppressed during this time.
Wow.
But guess what?
What?
The Benedictine rule survived.
Really? How did they manage to navigate such a tumultuous period?
Benedictine communities in some regions were able to adapt and weather the storm. They emphasized their commitment to the core principles of Christian faith while finding ways to coexist alongside the new Protestant denominations.
Okay.
It was a testament to their flexibility
and
their ability to find common ground.
Right.
Even amidst profound disagreement.
It's fascinating how a tradition so often associated with stability and continuity could also be so resilient in the face of such radical change.
It really speaks to the power of that underlying framework, that adaptable core that allowed the Benedictine tradition to bend without breaking.
So let's bring things into the present.
Okay.
What's the state of the Benedictine tradition today? Is it still relevant?
Absolutely.
In our fast-paced, tech-driven 21st century?
There are Benedictine monasteries and communities all over the world.
Right.
Men and women who continue to find meaning and purpose in this ancient way of life.
Mm-hmm.
And as we've been discussing, the core principles of the rule, balanced discipline, community service, are arguably more relevant than ever in our modern world.
You know, throughout this deep dive, I've been particularly struck by the Benedictine emphasis on hospitality.
Yeah.
What makes their approach so unique?
Uh-huh.
And how does it differ from other forms of hospitality?
That's a great observation.
Yeah.
The Benedictine rule doesn't just offer vague suggestions like be nice to guests.
Right.
It provides a detailed protocol for welcoming strangers.
Yeah.
Treating them with the utmost respect and generosity
mm-hmm.
as if they were Christ himself.
Right.
Remember that image I talked about earlier?
Yes.
The practice of washing a guest's feet?
Yes. It's such a powerful and humbling act of service.
It is.
It really flips our usual notions of hospitality on their head, doesn't it?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it's not just about outward actions either.
Right.
It's about cultivating an inner posture.
Okay.
Of openness and welcome.
Yeah.
Seeing every person who enters your space.
Mm-hmm.
As a bearer of the divine image.
Right.
Worthy of dignity and respect.
So it's not just about providing food and shelter. It's about creating a space where people feel truly seen and valued as human beings.
Precisely.
Right.
And that's a powerful lesson for us to carry into our own lives and communities.
Right.
In a world that's increasingly divided and polarized.
Mm-hmm.
The Benedictine practice of radical hospitality.
Yeah.
Offers a much-needed antidote.
Right.
It reminds us that we are all interconnected.
Yeah.
And that our differences, rather than separating us, can actually enrich our lives and make us stronger.
You know, I think that's a perfect place to wrap up our deep dive. And we started by asking how the Benedictine rule managed to not only survive, but thrive in a world of constant change and upheaval.
Yeah.
And I think we've discovered that the answer lies in its adaptability, its resilience, and its unwavering commitment to those core values that transcend time and circumstance.
And maybe most importantly,
we've
been reminded.
Yeah.
That the journey of faith
mm-hmm.
is not meant to be a solitary pursuit.
Right.
It's something we do together in community, supporting and challenging each other along the way.
Well said.
Thanks for joining us on this fascinating journey.
And until next time, keep diving deep.